Welcome to another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. I'm Sandy Klein. Aura Stuhl loves what she does, and what she does is empower executives to engage, connect, and influence. And those who do become more productive and successful both professionally and personally. Aura is an executive coach and has been working with professionals in leading New York companies for close to 20 years. She's the author of The Glass Elevator, a guide to leadership presence for women on the rise. In her book, Aura teaches us how to stop retreating and start ascending through her leadership presence coaching model. Aura is also a featured speaker at conferences across the country. She was also an adjunct professor of business communications at NYU's Stern School of Business. She graduated from the University of Pennsylvania, got her MBA from Columbia, and has had advanced training in shadow coaching, fierce and difficult and crucial conversations. But I expect that we'll have an easy, friendly, and informative conversation. Aura, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy.
What prompted you to write The Glass Elevator, and how does it compare to Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In or other similar books by women for women in the workplace?
Well, I've been coaching both men and women for over 15 years now. And over time, I saw that women had particular challenges in certain areas of leadership presence. Of course, not across the board. Of course, not every woman. But I began to see a pattern. Mm-hmm. And I became very passionate about helping women. Many companies now have these programs called Women in the Pipeline, which kind of makes me laugh. It's time to get women out of the pipeline. So one of the things I did was write a book specifically for women, professional women on the rise, to help them enhance their leadership presence and get them out of that pipeline.
Well, what does that mean, pipeline? That they're just, what, following the same trajectory as men? Why did pipeline bother you?
We have a tremendous number of women in corporate America in middle management. We still have very few at the top. Mm-hmm. So I'm passionate about helping women rise all the way to the top.
But what's stopping women? And I know that sounds like a very naive question, but if you've made it to a Fortune 500 company and you're working your way up that ladder, what happens? And the ladder just stops for them? And I don't mean that to sound naive, but why?
Well, you're asking the question everyone's been asking for a very long time.
I'm not original.
I don't believe anything is really stopping women. I do think there are challenges inherent in our society that are slowing us down. But we have many examples of today of things that are speeding us up. So while we still have some challenges, we certainly don't have major obstacles anymore.
So what is it that you're trying to get across to these women to break the glass ceiling and take the glass elevator up?
I don't really believe in breaking glass ceilings. When I think of glass ceilings, I see shattering glass.
Right.
That's kind of dangerous.
Yeah,
isn't
scary.
It?
Yeah.
Yeah, scary, messy. Mm-hmm. We all know who's going to clean up that mess.
Right. Yeah.
Breaking through glass is a one-time, singular, violent event. It is not a strategy for success. What I do in the glass elevator is I give specific tools to help you enhance the 9 fundamental elements that correlate with professional success.
And what are those 9?
So the first one is communicate with oomph or communicate with impact. It's also about executive presence. I call that strut your stuff. And it's about listening, listening like a leader. Let me give you an example. Many of the women executives that I coach are very, very successful for a singular area of expertise.
Okay.
But when I have the opportunity to shadow them in meetings, I observe something that I realize is a challenge. When it comes to other areas of expertise, they're not participating in the conversation. So once I went to a meeting with a client of mine, Lainey, a very senior level woman, PhD in statistics. Her area of expertise was risk management. Mm-hmm. I went to a meeting with her and observing her very closely, Lainey gives her update. Wow, no problem. Articulate, intelligent, well-structured, makes the numbers come alive.
Was she running the meeting?
No, she was a member of a leadership team.
Okay.
After Lainey gives her introduction, all the senior executives are called upon to give an update. After each update, questions ensue, sometimes debate. The energy in the room rises. There's boisterous conversation going back and forth. And during this period, I'm watching Lainey. And you know what? She's not participating at all. She is listening, but she's not participating. So afterwards, I say, hey, Lainey, you know, what was up with that? And she says, well, you know, that wasn't my area of expertise. I don't want to sound like the guys who talk like they're the authority on everything.
Like the big blowhards, sort
right.
of?
Mm-hmm. But here's the thing. Very often, it's not what we are doing, it's what we're not doing. And in that moment, Lainey was being viewed not for her expertise in risk management, but she was being viewed for limitation, not participating in what they call in the corporate world in the strategic thought process.
Mm-hmm.
So I gave Lainey a little tool to use, and she started using it and using it. 6 months later, she starts getting noticed. She was promoted. She was promoted again. And now she's the chief risk officer of the company.
And if you hadn't pointed these things out to her, right, she would have been clueless about this.
Right. But here's the deal. The tool is really simple. So simple. Think about this. Every meeting in the workplace is really about the same thing. It's really about either a problem
mm-hmm.
or a solution.
Mm-hmm.
So I simply suggested to Lainey that she started asking strategic questions about the problem or the solution when she didn't feel expert enough. So if someone was talking about the problem, well, how bad is it? What do we stand to lose? What's the ROI? In
mm-hmm.
this case, the risk of ignoring the problem.
Sure.
If everyone was talking about the solution, well, ask a question about it.
So did Lainey become, for all intents and purposes, invisible after she made her contribution, and then she sort of faded into the background?
Yes, that's a way of looking at it. And she needed to be viewed for a contribution to the strategic thought process at a senior leader, as a senior leader. As soon as she started being active in meetings, she was viewed as powerful. It was as if she was in the driving seat, driving the conversation with her questions about problems and solutions.
Let's pick on her some more. Why did she contact you? And the second question is, how the hell did you get into that meeting?
Because Lainey was a brilliant project manager, because she was expert in a certain area, she was promoted to VP, where she stayed and she stayed and she stayed stuck.
Mm-hmm.
And she asked for promotion and asked for promotion and asked for promotion, and she got me, an executive coach. So that's how it works. Very often, companies hire executive coaches to work with their most senior executives.
Oh.
Why? They're good. They're high potential. They've already invested in them. They want to assure continued success. And that's where I come in.
So it's not Lainey who called you. It was the powers that be. Oh, that's really interesting.
Yes. As an executive coach, I'm hired by leading companies in New York City, like American Express, Thomson Reuters, PwC, AIG, to work with their most senior leaders.
And to use Lainey again, was that off-putting for her? Did she feel, I don't mean insulted, was she upset that you came in to help her, even though it worked for her?
Absolutely not. At this point, in many companies, it's almost seen as a perk of being a senior leader. Think about it. Our leading athletes have coaches. They're wonderful, but they use coaches to assure continued success and to allow them to rise to even higher levels. So that is what I do.
Okay, so that was not clear to me. But an individual can contact you.
Yes.
And that does happen?
It happens. It's a smaller part of my business. It does happen. There are some people who decide to fund themselves out of pocket for various reasons. But the model of executive coaching is you're hired by companies to work with senior executives.
I'm gathering that you coach both men and women.
I do.
Do you feel good about where women are in the workplace?
I feel great about
you
where
do?
Women are. Yeah.
Really?
Do we still have challenges? Of course. But, you know, if we look historically of where we've been, we've come a long way, baby.
But on the other hand, it almost seems that we're still talking about this. When is that just going to fade away and we're not going to make a differentiation? Or is that never going to happen?
Well, I do look forward to the day when I ask an audience, how many of you have heard of the glass ceiling, and no one raises their hands?
Right.
I just spoke to a young audience recently, and they had still heard of it. But I'm looking forward to the day where they look at me like, what? What's that? I prefer the term the glass elevator.
Because why?
Why? Well, first think about a glass elevator. Everyone just loves getting on it. It's fun.
Mm-hmm.
It's a smooth ride. But when you get on an elevator, you press the button to where you want to go. You get off where you want to go. If you want to get back on, you can get back on. You can take people with you. Being a glass elevator, you have perspective. You could see where you're coming from, and you could see where you're going.
But everybody can also see you
mm-hmm.
in a glass elevator.
Right.
Is that a good thing?
Absolutely. In fact, you asked about, like, why are we still kind of stuck? And there's a lot of research recently about sponsorship in the workplace. Let's go back a few decades. We know we had a very strong old boys network in the workplace, and this network was very powerful in terms of helping one another.
Men helping other.
Senior men mm-hmm. helped more junior men. As women entered the workplace, one thing that didn't kind of follow with that model is sponsorship, having someone in the workplace advocate for you and bring you along to the top. And there are many reasons given for why we didn't have this model. One potential reason is that senior men were a little uncomfortable mentoring younger women. How would that look?
Mm-hmm.
Now that this research is out there, we know that sponsorship is a key element in helping women move to the top. So companies are educating their executives about what sponsorship means. They're creating programs to strengthen the sponsorship model in the workplace. And I think we're going to see some tremendous results in terms of women moving ahead because they have advocacy from both senior men and women.
Sometimes I wonder, I can see examples why there isn't a sisterhood. You know what I mean? That other women feel threatened by women in a different way than men do.
Right. Historically, when there were very few women in certain industries and certain functions, I don't think there was a sponsorship model because there were very few people who wanted the very few seats available to them.
Mm-hmm.
We have a different picture in the workplace now. We have more women in senior positions. Even so, that can become taxing to put the burden on a senior woman to sponsor
or mentor
junior women. So this is a responsibility for all senior executives, both men and women, in the workplace to attend to the growth and the ascension of their workforce.
So what are some of the other points in your book about getting us to move along?
We see a challenge with women not speaking up enough in
right.
the workplace. Well, another area that's a challenge for women is this area of networking, right? Expanding their sphere of influence. Men tend to have a breadth of relationships. Women tend to have fewer relationships but of greater depth.
Explain that more.
Well, we all need a network to support us in the workplace. We need a network to help us. We need a network to connect us to new opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
We need a network to learn from. We need a network to validate us. And we historically have not been as strong in the area of networking.
So how do we go about doing that?
One of the things to recognize is that we need a strong tribe. In this era of social media, we tend to think when we need thousands of followers to support us. For most of us, we need very, very few. In fact, there's some research that says that we need only 12 to 18 key people in our tribe to nurture our major needs.
And those 12 to 18 people are within our organization.
They could be. They could be external as well.
Uh-huh.
So I ask women just to first do a little bit of analysis of where they have people in the workplace or externally and professionally to support them and where they don't. And I ask them to focus on six areas: support, expertise, influence, feedback, validation, energy. Those are our needs. Do we have people feeding those needs?
Mm-hmm.
And if we have about three in each of those areas, we really have a very, very strong network. So instead of focusing on quantity, which takes a tremendous amount of time, I work with my clients to focus on quality of network.
And when you say you coach both men and women, what's the different approach between the two of them?
Well, one-on-one coaching is customized. So I work with an individual.
So you're very specific.
Yeah.
Yes.
For that person's needs. But one of the benefits of having worked with so many men and women over the course of my 20 years of coaching is that I can let women and men know that these are patterns that I'm seeing so they don't feel alone. And that's very comforting.
I bet it is. And some more?
Women tend to think self-promotion is a dirty word. You know, I don't want to toot my own horn.
Right,
I don't want to
right,
brag. So what do they say? They say, I'm just going to sit in my office and do really great work. I'm going to lock the doors and work.
And they'll see my noses to the grindstone.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And someday some archaeologist is going to
find my bones.
Yeah, find my bones, exactly, and uh-huh. declare my value to the world.
Uh-huh.
At that point, I'm sorry, Sandy, you're going to be dead.
Of course. Well, that's like somebody giving you a great eulogy. You don't hear it.
Right. So what I do is I reframe that idea of self-promotion for women in the workplace. And I say, what if you could do more of what you love to do, more good work for more people? How does that sound? And they say, whoa, I'd love to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you love to do that, you have to learn to talk about it. You have to learn to promote yourself in a likable way, but it has to be authentic. So I give women a lot of tools to make that idea of promoting themselves in the workplace more comfortable.
Give me examples.
So one example is using a formula that focuses on business results in the workplace, right? So if you're giving an update in a meeting, of course you set the context briefly. Then you talk about the actions you've taken. Here, we women can afford to use the I word. know, I did this, then I did this, then I did that, or my team and I have accomplished this.
Right.
The last part of the formula is R. That's the results. What are the results or the business impact? We women have to talk about the strategic financial results in order to succeed. So if you put this little formula together, you have CAR, C-A-R, set the context briefly. A, talk about the actions. R, what result or impact did it have in the workplace? And now you're driving your career forward with a very simple formula.
Wow, it just seems so easy. But it isn't, is it?
Well, what I try to do is give simple tools. They, you know, they don't take time. They're easy to master, but they make a tremendous difference in the workplace. When you use them, you shine, you're valued, you're noticed.
Is there an average amount of time that you're working with a client?
The standard executive coach engagement in the corporate world is 6 months. With my most senior executives, I may work, depending on the goals and, of course, depending on their travel schedule, mm-hmm. I may work with them over a course of a full year.
And how often do you get together?
Weekly.
You see somebody weekly. And they get homework, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. The people I work with are very, very driven. They want to succeed. They appreciate the fact that they have a coach to support them. They apply themselves. The workplace is this wonderful laboratory to try on all kinds of experiments, see what works, what doesn't, get feedback. When I come to their offices, they're so happy to talk about new awareness, new success, and even challenges, and get some guidance to go forward.
So they're not, and I use the term in quotes, insulted when you show up.
They're actually pretty happy, Sandy.
What was it like for you to start your own company? And how did you get into this?
I actually made a career change. I started my career in the field of marketing. I spent about 6 years in marketing, but I have to tell you, I was never really too interested in how many products or services we sold. I was always focused on how people communicated and led.
Or didn't.
Or didn't. Mm-hmm. In the workplace. That's what fascinated me. So in the early 90s, after I went to business school at Columbia, I actually made a career change and I entered the field of professional development. And in the early days, I was doing a lot of corporate group training. Mm-hmm. And again, in the early days, it was more communication and presentation based. Through that work, I started working with executives one-on-one. And again, early on, it was for things like critical presentations, investor pitches. And then slowly, kind of organically, I started doing this thing called leadership coaching before I even knew it. Executives would say to me, like, can I talk to you about something else or something going on in the workplace? And you seem kind of smart. I need someone to talk to. So I organically expanded my coaching from communication to leadership, woke up one morning and said, wait a second, this isn't communication coaching. This is something broader, more exciting, and I want to figure out all the elements of successful leadership. And that's when I transitioned, rebranded around executive coaching, got all the certifications that are necessary for it, and totally focused today on coaching very senior executives one-on-one so that they thrive professionally.
Are you surprised that your company is successful?
Now that's a difficult one. Am I surprised? I'm rewarded by it because I get up every morning and I get to help people. And I get a lot of positive feedback. I mean, what could be better than that?
Nothing.
To be able to help people and get positive feedback for doing it.
Was there ever a time when you thought, I don't know what I'm doing?
Of course, there are challenges to having your own business. I think you know that there are a million coaches walking around. Mm-hmm. Everyone suddenly, it used to be when you didn't have a job, you were making a transition, you called yourself a consultant.
Right.
Now everyone's a coach. Mm-hmm. And there are many, many coaching schools. They're churning out all types of coaches every single day. So the marketplace is chock full of coaches.
And how do you differentiate yourself?
Right. So what I do is I make sure my work is outstanding. And to be outstanding, you have to stand out, right? Mm-hmm. So some of the things that distinguish me as a coach is, first, I have my own coaching model called the Leadership Presence Coaching Model.
And I wanted you to talk about that. Right. What is that?
Right. As I mentioned before, is coaching executives over time, I began to identify the components of successful leadership. I put them into my own model that I've coined, leadership presence.
Right.
And I've defined it. A lot of people throw out that word. Don't define it. I have. Leadership presence is your ability to engage, connect, and influence in the workplace. Each of those three elements, engage, connect, and influence, I've broken down into three fundamental skills or behaviors in the workplace. So altogether, there are 9 must-have skills for leadership.
Right.
I've created a model of coaching around this. So that's the first thing that distinguishes me, proprietary, what we call intellectual property. The second thing is I'm a face-to-face coach. As you might know, in this day and age, everyone's doing things virtually, phone, Skype, etc. I think there's magic when I come into an executive's office. I come to them. I make it easy. So wherever they are, I'm there, and I bring my presence to the room.
But people who are very successful in business and can make a lot of sales or whatever may not necessarily be able to relate to people well. Can you teach that to somebody who's, I'm thinking of Meryl Streep in The Devil Wears Prada, for example, mm-hmm. that they don't know how to be human?
Let me bend your question a little bit.
By all means.
How do we succeed? How do you succeed? How do I succeed? We succeed by, I'll use a business word here, leveraging our strengths, right? Of course, do we all have opportunities to improve in certain areas, opportunities to develop? Absolutely. But fundamentally, our success is going to come from our strengths. So part of the coaching process is identifying what makes us unique.
Huh.
What makes us different than others and what makes us relevant to our audience? You'd be surprised that a lot of executives are not that in touch with that. And that's a starting point for success. So coaching is not simply about finding those opportunities to develop, finding those gaps and, you know, focusing on transforming
people. That would make it very linear.
Radically, right? It's also about discovering your whole range of strengths and how you can amplify those strengths to be successful in the workplace. Do we look at opportunities? Absolutely. We pick 1 to 3 goals in the course of a 6-month engagement to focus on. Because I'm an action-oriented coach, I support my client in giving very, very detailed, actionable items mm-hmm. to work on in the workplace. And do they grow? Absolutely.
So it's also, and this is naive on my part, it's also not saying to somebody, you're not wearing the right outfit.
In the early part of the engagement, we have to learn a lot about our clients as executive coaches. So I said we learn about their strengths and we learn about their opportunities. We learn about that by talking to our clients. But I also learn about my clients by doing something we call 360. I interview everyone in their realm, mm-hmm. seniors, peers, direct reports, to learn more about them. Now, if everyone says, let's use Lainey as an example.
Sure.
This was not the case. But everyone, you know, Lainey is just not showing up in terms of her presence in the meeting.
She's invisible.
Right. One of the things that we'll explore in the coaching is how can I become more visible? Certainly, we talked earlier about verbal things that she could do in meetings. But in some cases, there are nonverbal tweaks that one has to make to be more powerful and more visible in the workplace. And part of nonverbal communication is, of course, something you bring up, dress and appearance. And yes, that is a part of executive presence.
And a vibe that somebody sends out. I mean, do you sometimes find yourself being a psychologist a little bit?
I'm not trained a psychologist, but certainly there is an element of business therapy.
Sure.
In coaching. One of the things we do as coaches is we use questions to find the power within our client.
Mm-hmm.
So if I just sit here and tell you what to do, you may not be receptive to it. But if I can explore ideas that resonate with you and that come from within you, we'll see change much more quickly.
Has it ever happened that it didn't work out?
Well, sometimes more time is required for lofty goals, right? Certain contextual situations are very, very challenging for executives, and something has to shift internally in order to optimize the environment for them. So those things certainly happen. But being an executive coach means that you work in the contextual organizational environment and that you work with those challenges. There's so many things we can't change
mm-hmm.
around us. We can't change others. We can't change the environment, but we can change how we communicate within that environment. And sometimes it's just perspective, right? Changing a perspective, seeing something in a different light. You know, moving from a status of, let's say, being a victim, everyone's doing this to me and I can't trust them, to saying, how can I build more trust in this environment, in the workplace? What can I do to connect more with other people?
Do you work solely alone?
I'm a face-to-face coach, which means I run around to offices all day long meeting with executives.
And so you're hanging out there?
I'm going to their offices, yes.
Mm-hmm. How much time do you spend?
1 to 2 hours, depending if you're meeting weekly or biweekly. I tend to meet 1 hour every week. And then I have other opportunities to work with my clients. Sometimes I shadow them in meetings. If they have a critical presentation, I have the opportunity to rehearse with them. In a six-month or one-year period, I'm basically available to them in this kind of 24/7 way outside of those one-hour sessions. Call me, email me, ask me to come in for a special.
You're always on call?
I am on call, but I have to say that most executives are so busy, they're certainly not taking advantage of me 24 hours a day.
And it's not an awkward thing for you to be somewhere. Nobody is embarrassed.
Never.
That's great. That's great. Did you ever envision that this is what it was going to become and what it turned out to? I mean, you're hot stuff.
You know, when you're 18, you don't say, you know, when I grow up, I want to be an executive coach. I don't think you have a clue what that is. But looking back over my career so far, it's making an absolute lot of sense why I am here. This is the kind of work that I love to do. This is the kind of work that I'm good at. And this is the kind of work that continues to energize me.
Did that stun you just in terms of being able to make that match for yourself? Because you said you didn't start off that way. And then all of a sudden that you reinvented yourself and it really worked. Not completely reinvented because it's still business and that was what your background is in. But did you ever envision back then that you would be here doing this today?
No, I didn't. But I'm incredibly grateful.
Well, you're good. I mean, grateful is, you know, parenthetical almost. Where do you want to go from now?
Well, one of the things I do to communicate with my audience is I use video. Mm-hmm. So every month I release two, I call them vlogs, two vlogs. They're short videos, video clips with professional tips for success.
That anyone can see.
Anyone, yeah. You can all go to my website, ouracoaching.com, and you can sign up for my vlogs. And I've got such terrific response from these little video clips that I released. And one of the things I realized, this is another thing I love to do. I love making leadership come alive through video. It's kind of another way to bring my presence to people, but I can reach a much wider audience.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, wider audience right now. So one of the things I'm developing right now are video courses for middle management who don't have the opportunity to work one-on-one with executive coaches.
And who may be in Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Absolutely. So I'm developing some video courses. They're going to be on udemy.com. And really excited about kind of expanding my influence by reaching more people through video.
Give me an example or two of the words of wisdom that you might impart in a video blog.
Mm-hmm. I'm using my coaching model to structure my courses. So there are going to be three courses, one on how you can engage more in the workplace by communicating with impact, by enhancing your executive presence, and by listening to learn. Having a course on connecting, how can you build more powerful relationships inside the workplace and outside of the workplace, if you're a manager or boss, how do you empower individuals and how do you absolutely optimize that entire team's performance? And in the area of influence, which is my third course, I'm going to talk about how you can champion your ideas all the way to the top, how you can build a unique and very differentiated personal brand in the workplace so that you're chosen to do more good work, and how you get through those sticky, messy, chaotic workplace transitions successfully. If you connect with me on LinkedIn, Ora Stuhl, or look me up on my website, ouracoaching.com. You can sign up for all my updates and you'll get vlogs for free. And ultimately, you'll get great discounts for all these courses.
I watched one of them that was on gratitude.
Right. We kind of have this inside kind of gut feeling that being grateful is a good thing. Now, with all the research on the brain, we actually know that very intentional practices of gratitude change our brains. But we have to be very intentional about it. But it's easy and it feels good. So it's a very magical practice.
Well, how's this for a segue? I'm really grateful that you came on the program today.
I'm so grateful to be talking with you.
Thank you so much, Ora. And
Thank you, Sandy.
There's a lot of very good advice. Get her book, The Glass Elevator, A Guide to Leadership Presence for Women on the Rise. Join us for another edition of the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. And if you'd like to reach the 51%, contact us at advertising@51%conversations.com. I'm Sandy Klein.
Thanks for listening to the 51% Conversations with Creative Women. For show comments and suggestions, please follow us on Twitter at Sandy Klein Show. You can also find us on Facebook at The 51% Conversations. The show is produced and recorded by Chad Dugatz at the Hangar Studios in New York City. Sandy Klein is our executive producer.